listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast. Welcome, everybody, to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the greatest and most winningest team in the history of Major League Baseball. Of course, I'm talking about the San Francisco Giants, and my name is Willie Dills. This is episode 42. Of course, the Jackie Robinson and nobody else ever gets that number again episode. And I'm joined right now, currently, by only Chad King. Chad, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
I would be better. It's already been 6 weeks since the Giants have won a World Series. I'm kind of itching for another one already.
It's hard to remember that, you know?
I know, It's
way too long has passed.
6 weeks is just, I don't like that break. No. Better than the two-year break, but.
Yeah, better than the two-year break, but, and definitely better than the 50-plus year break, but, you know, I don't know. At this point, we're expecting them to just, I just want every weekend to end with a World Series victory at this point.
Let's at least do the Brett Saberhagen, like, every other year.
Sure.
I'd be fine with that.
Sure, why not? I mean,
you can't be that greedy.
You could call that the Buster Posey almost at this point, too. I mean, every other year you win a World Series. So this is episode 42. The Giants, we just mentioned, the Giants are 6 weeks out from their World Series victory. And we're going to talk today on this show about our preseason Super Sowed combo platter with us and the guys from Two Guys, a Glove, and a Coke Bottle that we recorded at the Public House on April the 1st.
Yeah, it was April Fool's Day.
It was an April Fool's Day. Yeah, this it was a big prank on our livers that we played that day. And if anybody hasn't listened to that episode and you're somehow halfway through the season, you discovered this show, go back and listen to that episode. I'm not sure what number that is. It's maybe in the late 20s or something, or the,
I think somewhere around there. Yeah.
All right. So it's look for the one
published,
that was posted.
It was published on April 3rd, I think.
Yeah. It was published a couple days after because I had basically hours of audio, and it was in three different chunks because first we maxed out the memory on the card that I was using, then the batteries went out, and so everything was just kind of it was a cluster F, I guess you could call it. Although on that particular episode, I would have said clusterfuck. I'll go ahead and say it. Why not? It is a podcast.
Hey, you know, if we could have one of those once a year, I'd be fine.
Yeah,
I thought it was a horrible episode, but you know, going back and listening to it sober, it was actually pretty entertaining.
It was pretty funny. Yeah, so I'm excited to see if we can get that going again with Danny and Thomas. They've been going strong. I think they just put out like episode 92 or something like that.
I just listened to today in the gym. Yeah, so it was pretty entertaining. They did a good job.
Yeah, they're always fun to listen to. And then
except Danny had his dog in the room, so.
Oh.
Damn dog kept shaking her head and, you know, jingle, jingle, jingle. It's like, dude, put your dog away.
Man. Podcasting 101.
I mean, it's almost like you're drinking and, you know, you could hear the ice clinking in a cup. And it's
almost as bad as that.
So unprofessional.
So we're going to talk a lot about the news going on with the Giants before we delve into that. But we're going to jump in. We're going to talk about some of the predictions we made on that show and whether or not those came true. Some things did come true and some things we were quite far off on, I would say.
just a little bit.
It was pretty funny to listen to where the team was in our minds before the season started. And now looking back and saying we won the whole damn thing. It's very strange.
Internet.
Yeah, it's very, very strange. All right, so let's jump in with the news currently. The current Giants news, because we haven't done a show in a month now.
Yeah.
Just over a month, like 5 weeks. So
yeah, we had to let the hangover wear off.
True.
You know, the confetti settle, and then, you know, a little hot stove action kick up. So
yeah,
There's been quite a bit the last week or two.
And there's since, you know, I mean, obviously free agent season starts for a lot of teams immediately the day after they get eliminated from the playoffs. They start thinking about the next year. When you win the whole thing and you go to the World Series, you kind of have a little bit more of a rush on what you got to do because you have less time. You know, I mean, you were not thinking about 2013. You were thinking about winning it all. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly it's like, okay, well, now we got to get on the ball here. And the Giants, I will say this, the Giants have gotten on the ball. Now, not a lot of pickups yet, but keeping our team together is one of those things that I honestly think every single World Series winning team should do. I think it's like almost like something that should just be a tradition. When you win it all, you should try your best to keep that team together. No, some teams don't do that like at all, not even close. The Marlins.
Yeah, not even close.
Yeah, Marlins. but, you know, it's very rare at this point. And, you know, there was a time, think about like the Yankees back in the day where, you know, they would keep pretty much the same core of their team together for decades. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's pretty cool that the Giants seem to be pulling that off right now. So let's jump right in. First, the biggest one, I think, was Scudero. So,
yeah.
Chad, what was the Scudero deal? If you go ahead and break that down for us a little bit.
Yeah, so 3 years. $20 million. I think I accidentally put $30 million in there before.
Yeah, I switched it. I was like, whoa, that's a big ass deal for a 37-year-old.
I knew that in my mind. It was 20, but yeah, so 3 years for $20 million, which all of it guaranteed. And I think in a perfect world, I think 2 years would have been better from a financial standpoint because he's 37 years old. And obviously the last year of that contract when he's 40, it might not look very good. But the fact of the matter is he's a proven, consistent, you know, 270, 280 hitter. And what he did for the Giants last year, you just can't say enough about it. So, I mean, he earned all of that money.
Absolutely.
And even if we get one and a half more good years out of him and he turns into Aubrey Huff and, you know, year 2.5 and 3, fine, so what? He helped us win a freaking World Series.
True.
You know?
And I think he gives us, looking at who's available at second base.
Yeah.
If we don't retain Scudero, we don't have Freddie Sanchez, let's be honest. He's not coming back. He will sign with somebody, but, you know, that's going to be tentative at best, whether he even plays ever again.
Yeah, it might even be a minor league deal if he even
exactly.
gets that. Yeah.
But looking at the rest of the second basemen who are available, you really got to say that the Giants stepped up here and did the right thing to pick this guy up because there was just nothing out there.
There was nothing out there, and it was definitely, you know, a seller's market. I mean, mm-hmm. the players had so much leverage this year. I mean, look at Greinke. You know?
Yeah.
It's just the way it was. But, you know, he's not a $25 million a year guy. So I think, you know, Scudero is the perfect fit for the Giants.
Absolutely.
Even at his advanced age, because the only other option they would have is maybe going after Terrio. But
well,
again, Terrio, you have Terrio and who else?
Terrio would make sense if you couldn't get Scudero. Terrio, I think, would be the next logical choice.
The next logical step, yeah.
But, I mean, Kelly Johnson maybe is someone you could look at. But it's not, you know, that's not an exciting name. Bill Hall is still available. They got Fontenot. Cano was obviously gonna go back to the Yankees. That wasn't really even reality for anybody. And you look at the other names. It's like Betancourt, Willie Harris. I mean, these are not guys that you're gonna say, yeah, we want to plug that guy into second base and challenge for another World Series. So I think Scudero coming back. Apparently, the third year was the sticking point for him, and he was getting offers of 2 years with a third-year option, team option by other people. And then as soon as the Giants said third year guaranteed, he said, yes, let's do it. That was his thing and his agent. And they wanted just to know that 3 years from then he would have a contract and he was going to make some money. And that makes sense. You know, when you're getting older, this is your you just played amazing lights out baseball down the stretch, hit .362 for the Giants and then just destroyed it in the playoffs. This is the last time you're probably going to have this market value. So he had to go ahead and hold firm, I think, on that. And I can't disagree with either side on this one. I think both sides said, look, this is what's right. And the Giants said, we'll suck it up and give you that third year because we want you at least for next year. And hopefully he'll still be quality in 2014 as well. So 2015, whatever. Take it or leave it. It's fine.
Yeah, take it or leave it. He could become another Aaron Rowan where they just dump him halfway through the season and eat his contract.
But it's a cheaper Aaron Rowan, too.
He's not even making as much as Aaron Rowan.
No, not even close. So I think it
makes me feel a little better about it.
I think it's an A-plus move right there for Brian Sabian. Now, the next biggest step was Angel Pagan. and we ended up picking him up as well. And now there was a couple of key things to this deal. First, we got it done before a lot of the other big-name outfielders got signed.
Including one in particular.
Yeah, one specific one who you could maybe point to as the guy maybe closest in skill set, a few more years on him, but... you know, I mean, of course, we're talking about the Flying Hawaiian. We'll talk about him a little bit more later, but you know, that the deal that he got, if that had happened before Pagan, we may not have been able to pull off what we did get him for, which is four years at 40.
Mm-hmm.
So $10 million a year. Now, how do you feel about that price for Pagan?
Again, with this year's market, I think he might be worth 8 or 7.
Sure.
But again,
reality, reality is he's probably somewhere in the 7 to 8 range.
Yeah, but if it's a different year, maybe that's what they get him for. But again, there's not many options out there. They had Victorino, who's a little bit older, and who a lot of us don't particularly care for anyway.
Well, I would hate it if he came to the Giants.
Yeah, exactly. We won't go into that right now. But
sure.
But yeah, they did sign him the day before the Flying Hawaiian went over to Boston. So that helped a lot. And I think Pagan wanted to stay. I mean, he was a little cheeky in some of the interviews when they asked him if he's willing to come back. And he's just like, well, we're just going to let the market play out itself.
Yeah.
And, you know,
but that's the answer you have to. That's like the coached answer. You know what I mean?
Well, a lot of these guys, they can't take the hometown discount, right? They're going to hurt the union. They're going to upset some of the other players. You know, it's like, hey, man, you're lowering the market value. So, hey, 4 years, $40 million. I'm comfortable with it. Again, less than Aaron Rowan.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And
so,
and the thing is,
let's just compare everything to Aaron Rowan right now.
That's the Aaron Rowan. That's the Aaron Rowan measuring stick. Yeah. So again, though, with the guys who are out there, unless you're picking up maybe Bourne to play center field, I feel like, you know, I think Upton got way too much money from the Braves.
Too much money. Yeah.
You know, 5 years, $75 million. I think that's way too much. So I'm pretty happy, you know, and again, Granderson, all the Yankees guys were just going back to the Yankees. I mean, they were pretty much knowing that they were going to get 1 year and they were going to get a pretty decent amount of money.
Right.
But you look and, I mean, you imagine like plugging Ian Keel in or something like that. Like we could have gotten stuck with something like that. And while Ian Keel will hit the crap out of the ball from time to time and throws it on a rope, he's just such a... iffy player at best. You know, you don't know what you're going to get out of that guy from game to game. So with Pagan, you know, Pagan's going to consistently hit. I'd say he's going to hit 270, 280 again, you know, for the next couple of years.
Sure.
He's going to steal 25 bases. He's going to hit a couple of home runs and a lot of triples, and he's going to play pretty good outfield for us. So I think honestly, he's a good fit and he's popular here, and he wants to be on this team, and he was a big part of the chemistry. So
big part of the chemistry. 288 last year, and that was after a pretty slow start.
Exactly. So. He had several times during the season where he was slumping a little bit. We had the whole pull him out of first, bat him fifth for a while.
Yeah.
You know, we had all kinds of weird situations with Pagan throughout the season. For a lot of it, he was overshadowed by Melky, and in the end, it was Pagan. You know, I mean, it was Pagan all the way down the stretch. So, and he played unbelievable ball for us all the way through clinching. And, you know, it wasn't like he was major during he wasn't Pablo or Scudero in the playoffs in the World Series. But, I mean, I don't know if you remember, he hit two leadoff home runs. He had a lot of really big plays, a couple of really big catches. He had that one weird diving catch where it looked like he jumped up and threw the ball. but actually, he was just fist pumping because he was so excited.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, as a Giants fan, it's a feel good move to pick him back up, I think.
Well, let's put it this way: Melky Cabrera, which the Giants, I think we all knew, didn't want to touch with a 10-foot pole. I mean, he wasn't even invited to the World Series parade. I mean, he burned too many bridges with the Giants.
Yeah,
you know, and he could have salvaged that relationship, by the way. But again, that's another story for another day. But he signs 2 years for $16 million with the Blue Jays, and you know that's what the Giants would have had to pay to keep him, or maybe even more. And so, you know, it's on par with Pagan. And at this point, with that amount of money, I'd rather have Pagan than Melky, because you don't know what Melky's going to be without the juice.
No,
you just don't know.
Yeah,
not to mention the PR nightmare and how it might affect chemistry in the locker room and how he didn't even say goodbye to the players. You know, all that stuff.
Sure. So. I mean, it's not just him not on the juice. Which I think he could still be a good player if he just puts in the work like everybody else. But it's not just that, but it's him potentially mentally kind of broken after what happened. You know what
I
mean? You don't know if his head's fully in the game. I mean, I'm sure he's going to feel like he's got something to prove now. And I gotta say, he lucked out getting the deal he did. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But
yeah, no, we will. Yeah,
where he landed to. So anyway, we're gonna try to add Ben into the call here. Ben was moving, I think, recently, so he's still.
Please join us, Ben.
That I was.
Hey, there he is. Yeah. So Ben,
internets.
Ben is here now, and you're right on time because we're just getting started talking about Scudero Pagan, and now.
No, we're already at. Why are they going to win it all? What are you talking about?
Oh yeah, that's right. Sorry, Ben. But
so close.
But we are now getting ready to talk about Jeremy Affeldt. So Affeldt got 3 years, $18 million. Which is a nice contract for a middle reliever. Very nice contract for a middle reliever, but somebody I think is super valuable to the Giants. Even though we're kind of loaded with lefties, he's not a loogie. He's not a lefty one-out guy. You know what I mean? He's a guy who can, as we saw in the World Series, go out there and give you two innings of really good ball. And and he can pitch a lot in a lot of days in a row. You know, he's the best hitter on the team, according to him. So 3 years.
He's sturdy. He's still good at keeping the ball low, which is something that we sometimes really need on this team.
Sure.
He's, you know, it's a valuable skill set that he can parlay into closing experience if he has to. And we've used him in that aspect before. So, I mean, he's got as a middle reliever, he's got a ton of value, and he's definitely been really useful for the team.
Yeah. Ben, you're a little funky right now. Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Affeldt, as long as he stays away from the kitchen utensils, you know, he's, yeah, he's not a guy who, he doesn't get hurt on the field. Let's put it that way.
Or his kid jumping in his arms.
Yeah.
3 years is enough time for him to have another baby. So we're guaranteed at least one more championship.
Yeah, true. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
That's plenty of time.
But also he fits the Giants clubhouse feel very well. I mean, he's a funny guy. He's interesting. He's quirky. And, you know, that's kind of what this team is. And I like being able to fill the team back up with some of those guys who are really likable Giants and also really good performers. So I think, honestly, these three guys, picking all three of them back up, these were big question marks going into the offseason.
Well, I think he's a valuable lefty. I mean, Lopez is obviously, I think he's stronger against lefties, but Affeldt can get both righties and lefties out. I think that's what's huge about him, you know, with his little sidearm delivery. I mean, righties hit 244 off of him. Lefties hit 236. So pretty comparable.
Jeremy Affeldt has really never been a big splits guy for us, which has been really useful because we tended to use him as a left-handed reliever. But at the same time, that's because literally he's left-handed and Bochy likes that. But
yeah,
you know,
he does like the matchups. But he at least
he's shown that you can leave him in, though. You know, he's not a loogie type guy. Right, we really used Javier Lopez in much more of a loogie role this year, although not constantly. But Affeldt really got more of a, like, you happen to be left-handed, now face some right-handers type guy.
Well, you know, there's a situation that comes up quite often, which is the manager splits his lefties and righties up just for the purpose of screwing things up late in the game where you can't just leave a single reliever in and plow through your lineup, you know. And he's a guy who can kind of battle that a little bit, where I don't have to burn all of my guys trying to get through one seventh inning, you know.
Right.
He can actually go ahead and maybe two out of three of the guys who are coming up are lefties. You leave him in for that righty in the middle, and you're fine. You know, he's not going to blow
it. Speaking of effective on both sides, can we give some respect to Sergio Romo developing a pitch that breaks the other way?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. No, that's beautiful.
That's going to be so big next year.
That was so much fun to watch because I didn't even quite like even watching him. I hadn't quite realized he'd done that. Where he's instead of just constantly having that ridiculous slider that breaks away from righties, he has a pitch that breaks away from lefties last minute now too.
Yeah,
and I didn't remember that from before.
Well, it's pretty much just like a two-seam
fastball. A lot more
fastball.
Break than I expect. Yeah, yeah, basically.
But he's
got a ton of break on it.
Yeah, his arm slot and everything just puts a lot of movement on pitches anyway. So when he gets that grip going, he's going to get a ton of movement on it. And it's to me, it makes you feel very comfortable having him be considered the guy in the ninth inning because, you know, you look at the speed, the velocity he throws at, and he's not your prototypical closer. But when you say that he can move the ball away from either side of the plate, you know, that's just perfect. And with everybody, and you saw with the best hitter in baseball getting frozen on a strike three for the last out of the World Series, that's not supposed to happen, you know.
No.
But yeah, it was one of those like perfect pitches at the perfect moment, and love seeing that. And you know, we'll talk about Brian Wilson later as well, but you got to feel real comfortable with Sergio right now. So let's talk about the guy who we still haven't signed, but we're pretty positive is going to happen. He is arbitration eligible, which means you know we get to take a shot at him, and we've already tendered him, so basically we know we're signing him.
Yeah.
Hunter Pence. Now, from what we hear right now, it sounds like the Giants don't want to go longer than maybe 2 years. I would love to see him stay for 3 or 4. You know, he's kind of in the prime age for a baseball player right now. And
yeah, but I think after last year, the Giants are showing some caution in taking it slow with
sure,
him.
Sure. I think
he's going to be a lot more comfortable this year, and I think that's going to help a ton.
Yeah, I think honestly, the right thing to do with Pence is to max out at 3 years because of the fact that, yeah, he struggled down the stretch, obviously. We all know about that. We know what he's capable of. But when you have put, you know, some of these deals like Zito and like Rowan together and had them bite you in the ass down the line, you know, Brian Sabin is a lot more comfortable, I think, just saying here's 1 and 2 years and we'll figure it out after that's over.
You know, we're developing a bunch of, we've already thrown a bunch of deals at guys, Scudero and Pagan and everybody else. I can see them kind of going, you know, we don't want to lock up the entire outfield. We want to have a little bit of wiggle room. At the same time, you know, if you're going to lock up the outfield, locking it up for Pagan and for Pence and having Blanco and Torres around for depth, not a bad thing.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I mean, you got to feel good about the outfield you'll have if you can keep all those guys going. And,
right.
You know, Pence, I think the struggle for him is going to be to figure out how to hit in this ballpark, because really he's played most of his career in places where he hits home runs pretty regularly, and it's not mm-hmm. going to be
yeah,
as easy
and
for
I mean,
him to do that.
Minute Maid Park is a little weird, so I'll give him credit. He's dealt with some strange fields before with some quirks, like that weird hill in the center.
Yeah, that's the worst thing ever
you know,
in baseball.
But,
yeah.
You know, playing in Citizens Bank Park and then shifting to AT&T is going to be a pretty big adjustment for anybody. And I think we saw that more with Pence, you know, and he had a lot dumped on his shoulders in a way at first, until later sort of some of that pressure got taken off towards the end of the postseason. But initially when he showed up, there was sort of this pressing feel of, you know,
yeah,
Pence
you're the guy.
The guy.
Yeah. You're going to,
you're the guy.
You're
going to
get us there
at the end of the, yeah.
Yeah.
When it turned out to be Scudero, which nobody saw coming and
no,
good for him.
Exactly.
But you know, everybody at first was like, Pence, you're going to be the guy. Hi, Marco Scudero. Nice to have you. Pence, you're going to be the guy. And yeah, that's a lot to dump on a guy, you know,
sure.
And I mean, not everybody can kind of handle that like Buster Posey did.
No, it's the second time it's happened to him,
too. Came back and you're the guy. Mm-hmm. He was like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm the guy. And sure. But for, you know, for a lot of guys, including Pence, that's rough.
No,
and,
definitely.
Hopefully nobody expects him to be the guy next year. But at the same time, we see him, you know, at least hit above league average. I'd be good with that.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, when you look at the lineup and you think of Pence as your five hitter, you're the five hitter. You're not 3 or 4. You're not expected to be the guy. And when you come in halfway through and our offense is struggling, obviously there's a little bit more expectation. But starting the year off, I definitely don't think it's going to be there, because we saw what Pablo could do when he's healthy and when he's got no hamate bones. And we know what Buster Posey can do.
Well, he didn't need him.
Yeah, didn't need him. We know what Buster Posey can do. And now we don't need Pence to be anything more than what he is. And that's just a solid five hitter.
We've got a really solid 1 through 5 if Pence at least makes some steps back towards the Hunter Pence that we've seen in the past.
He's a 285 career hitter. He's played like 7 seasons. You know,
exactly.
He only had 59 games with the Giants last year. And he hit .219. So
we're
clearly
seeing the same small sample size thing about Scudero in the opposite direction. So
in
there's
the
no reason
direction.
To expect that there won't be some regression for Pence too.
Yeah, absolutely, in the opposite direction. So you know, let's hope for a good 260, 270 year.
I think it'll all even
bombs.
Out. I think he hits 280. I think he has a decent year, and I think he hits 20 home runs, and you know, I think he does all, and gets 100 RBIs again. I really honestly think that's what's going
to
happen
on the road, but that's fine. We don't
yeah,
mind that.
Probably. I mean, that's where the Giants get their home runs. So.
Sure.
Why would it be different for him? Now, here's
last year a lot of their wins too.
That's true.
For a while.
Now here's the move that I don't think anybody saw coming, and that is Andres Torres is back in a Giants uniform for 1 year at $2 million.
I'm excited.
I'm super excited about this.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, I think it's a good deal. You know,
it's $2 million, and we were worried about Blanco being our only option in left field.
Yeah.
And now there were some guys out there that I thought were good fits. Ludwig being one, I thought he would have been a good fit. I mean, he's a good hitter. The thing is, you're not going to get Ludwig for $2 million. you're going to pay $7-8 million for that guy. So
just because he didn't hit. Yep.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So I think,
and because Ryan Ludwig magically turned into a decent defender last year for a while,
and the Cardinals want him back. You know, the Cardinals do want him back. So they were going to put some pressure on that.
Yeah.
And the Reds want him back, and they were going to pressure that market a little bit. And so I think, you know, when you think about it, unless, you know, you're getting like Johnny Gomes or something, like, I don't know who makes more sense than picking up Torres on the cheap, you know. And we definitely weren't bringing out back Melky. We weren't going to go out and get Juan Pierre. You know, like, this was kind of the guy that was left over. And when you're thinking you need a platoon guy, Cody Ross is the only guy who makes sense besides him, and he doesn't want to be a platoon guy.
Yeah. Which is understandable.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't with the Sox by the end of the year, and, you know, why would he want to go back to that?
No, absolutely.
I'm sure he'd love to come back here, but, you know, you got to think career, and, we're not going to cut Cody Ross any flack for saying that he wants to actually have a starting job.
No, he's very popular in Boston, too. So
Well, he's popular everywhere because he's a nice guy.
Yeah, and he's
But so
he's
is
solid,
Andres
yeah.
Torres, and that's why everybody's so excited to have him back. Plus, I mean, if you look at it this way, for $2 million, assuming that what we're hearing is correct, essentially for $2 million, you're getting another Gregor Blanco.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and you're getting two guys with speed you can move around the outfield. All three of them are we got three guys who can basically play all fields. And then you got Pence, who's, he could go left field, but he's a right fielder. You know what I mean? So basically you have a lot of movement you can do depending on if you need to pinch hit guys. Right. Pinch run guys, and that's really something Bruce Bochy likes, being able to mix and match players and who's got the hot hand right now and all that.
Switches this year.
Oh my God, I'm excited. Oh God,
we're double switching Andres Torres in for Gregor Blanco, so really nothing's changed.
Yeah. So exactly, it's a net zero impact.
We just moved Blanco back down the lineup so he could hit again. That's what we did, if that happens. Yeah. I think honestly, fantastic move, and on the cheap, and he's obviously already popular here, so he's going to feel comfortable. I don't know if he ever really got it going in New York.
Because I feel like Gregor Blanco turned out to, like, both of them turned out to be better hitters with the Giants than we thought. Torres turned out to be a worse hitter with the Mets than they thought, based on what they'd seen with us, although, you know, you never know whether that's related to New York or the field or other stuff he had going on health-wise, or, you know, whether we're going to see more of the New York Andres Torres or the Giants Andres Torres here. But I think it's interesting that sort of when you look at the reputation each of them had kind of going into their upcoming season as a Giant, all of a sudden it's like Gregor Blanco hit better than you expected. Andres Torres hit worse than you expected. Does that mean they average out?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
if they play the equal number of games, yes.
I think here's the thing.
Can we just give them together one stat line?
Both of them are somewhat streaky players. So if you ride their streaks, I think they both can have positive seasons. What happened with Blanco was we had no other option when he was cold, and he just kept sitting out there being cold, you know, and it looked really bad. But there was definitely times in the season when he was not cold, and, you know, and he's got the ability
when he's on. Absolutely.
Exactly. He's got the ability, and I'll never forget Gregor Blanco for the rest of my life because of his catch in Matt Cain's perfect game. So
absolutely.
I have a warm spot in my heart for both of these players, and I'm just happy to see the Giants making positive moves to bring fan favorites back into the fold. This is cool. You know what I mean? This is really cool. Not a lot of teams get to do that. Most of the time,
a guy combined 240 to 250, and that's about what we expect.
Totally.
So,
yeah. We'll be happy.
And it's nice because it's a fan favorite move that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. It's not like we're pulling, you know, trade Zach Wheeler for Carlos Beltran here.
Yeah, no, totally.
Which was a fan, desired move that didn't make any sense in a way, but a little. But this is a fan favorite move that makes sense, financial sense. It makes sense looking at the free agent market. Like, I'm actually really excited about this move, and it's not just because it's Torres, but it's because it's like getting to have like fat free cake. I'm really excited about this move, and I don't feel guilty about it in the slightest.
No,
because it makes
it's
much sense.
Not gonna hurt anything.
So. I hope it tastes better than fat free cake.
That's true. I like my gluten. So Blanco is definitely coming back. He's arbitration eligible. His stats aren't going to make him a big number, though. So, you know, he'll probably get something comparable to what Torres just got. And he spent most of his career kind of back and forth between the minors and the majors. He's not going to get a huge contract. So neither of these guys are going to break the bank. And I think it's definitely serviceable to have that platoon. We'll probably have to fill it with some. We'll probably have to fill it with somebody else at some point. Obviously, Belt can move out there if need be, but I would like to see Belt just sit at first base all year long this year. Spelled by Posey, obviously, when he needs his spell from catcher. But you know, I think the outfield is fairly set. I don't think we're going to see any more big moves there. And you got to feel good about what's happened so far. I mean, we're going to see something else, I think, but we're pretty much at the point now where we're starting to solidly know what our team's going to look like. So the other thing, though, that happened was Sabian and Bochy are both now going to be with the Giants until the end of 2014. So that
I don't know.
Is...
I was pretty disappointed with the job they did last year.
Sure, yeah. I would like them to give us two World Series per year, if they could do that.
Right.
Because one is just not enough.
I'll take
that
a
should
World
be a requirement
Series
in their
the
contract.
That's okay.
Yeah, they should get incentives for winning more than one World Series per year.
Yeah, well, even Larry Bear said this is in the category of no-brainer.
Sure,
so,
absolutely. Know. I mean, what do we even talk about with this one? Is there any question that you'd bring back the general manager who brought you two World Series in 3 years?
I haven't heard anyone complain about this, but if this year the Giants have a subpar year, it's all going to come back out.
Well,
again.
Sure.
Everyone's
going to
complain about it. Sure.
You guys remember the Lunatic Fringe? They're still there.
Yeah.
You know.
No, reactionary decision making and reactionary anger are just two like Giants fan hallmarks.
Yeah.
It's just normal.
Our team is like the weather; it's changeable.
Now here's an interesting little thing going on down south is. Brian Sabian's former right-hand man. Yeah, exactly.
Both doing it.
Brian Sabian's former right-hand man has apparently lost his freaking mind. So Ned Colletti, who spent a long time as the assistant GM here, is now just signing
Secret Agent Ned.
Anybody who walks by, apparently, to multi-year million-dollar contracts.
No, dude, he's Richard Pryor in Brewster's Millions. He's just been given all this money, and he's just spending it as fast as he can. That's what it seems like. He's just going and pulling
baseball
players.
Do you think Magic Johnson?
I get money this year? Let's do this thing.
You think Magic Johnson said to him, you have to spend $225 million or else you don't get to keep anything? Like
exactly. I'm sure that's what happened, because that's the only explanation.
You get this much money. It's only good for right now.
Yeah.
Start spending.
Well, here's the thing. The Dodgers are actually, this is fairly smart of them. And I don't often say that the Dodgers did anything smart, right? But here's the thing. The way that the luxury tax works is that the longer you are eligible for the luxury tax, the more you pay in it. So since this would be the first year, actual year, they would actually have to pay into that. They actually don't have to pay
bad,
that
right?
much. Yeah. It's something like between 5 and 10 million. It's not like the Yankees, who are always way over everybody else and then have to just shell out big bucks. You know, while
they're constantly up there, right?
Yeah, while they're actually passing it by such a large margin, this is the first time they've really done it. What they can do if it doesn't work is try to dump a bunch of salary next year and figure
pull
out
Red Sox the next year.
Sure, figure out who works and who doesn't and try to dump a bunch of salary at that point, because there's a bunch of teams now that are starting to just extend their salaries, their salary bases by a ton. I mean, you look at like what the Blue Jays have done this year.
Well, you look at like what the Giants did this year too. I mean, we're going into the season with a payroll over $140 million for probably the first time.
Yeah, no, I mean, but you'd expect the World Series winning team to increase their payroll by
right,
an amount,
but it's,
you know.
This is a pretty significantly substantial for us, in the sense that, you know, we're throwing money at some of the guys to bring them back, which makes sense, but we're really overshooting what we've previously shot.
And well,
and
we're
finally kind of admitting that we as a franchise have money, which
yeah,
is fair.
Yeah. Well, we should after winning two and three. So, but the thing is the Dodgers went from middling, you know, to just blowing it out of the water. Largest payroll in history of Major League Baseball. That's crazy. You know, I mean, that's just crazy
that's
to
saying
do.
Some things, considering what kind of history the Yankees have with that kind of stuff. But yeah, this is, you can tell though, if you just look at the number, like the video game cartoon numbers you're seeing whenever a new contract news comes out, it's ridiculous.
Now, Chad, if I were to tell you that the Dodgers had a payroll of $225 million, who would you expect to be on that team? Like, if you could just go, not knowing at all what happened, and I just said to you, hey, by the way, the Dodgers are now spending $225 million a year.
Not Zach Greinke.
Yeah, like, would you expect it to be Adrian Gonzalez,
expect,
Zach Greinke, Carl Crawford?
Not expect
Gonzalez,
Josh Hamilton.
I could maybe see
Yeah, but I would think it would be, yeah, I think it would be Hamilton.
Sebastia,
like, I think they've, yeah, I've gotten Pujols. All these guys. Miguel Cabrera came out, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, I would have mm-hmm. think that they would have just gone for the huge names, but it's, yeah, I mean, these guys, I don't know if these guys deserve as much as they're getting paid, and especially not all of them together getting paid on the same team. It's crazy to me. So, I we'll see. I mean, obviously,
I
their team is going to be quality.
It's overpaying for Zach Greinke, but at the same time, it's going to, like, I still think that the worst overpay that I've seen so far this offseason was $39 million for 3 years of Shane Victorino.
So yeah, absolutely. Talked a little bit about that before we started recording.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was definitely. I mean, I think a lot of people got overpaid already, but you know,
it's that kind of it's a real ridiculous market just because there's a lot of really strong middling depth in this market, but there's just not a lot of big names at the top. I mean, Hamilton's sure. probably the biggest, and just concerns about Hamilton's makeup are probably what are keeping him from getting more than a, you know, 3 or 4 year deal so far.
Yeah, and he's injured quite often, so.
And that too. So, I mean, that pretty much leaves Michael Bourne, which Michael Bourne.
Hey, he's going to get something. He's a little bit on the older side, but he's going to,
sure,
you know, he's still a quality player.
Something is dropping rapidly, I feel like. It's just, yeah. Or I don't even know about rapidly. I feel like there's something, we're not seeing it so far. Like, you know, Pagan has already signed. And Victorino has already signed. That leaves Michael Bourne as one of the big prizes of the offseason. And at the same time, like, I don't feel like there's been this huge push to sign Michael Bourne. Everybody, I feel like, went after
it's
some
weird.
Of the others.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I wonder if his agent is just asking for something astronomical at this point, and nobody
wants
to play
Scott
ball.
Boris?
I believe so. Yeah, and if so, that would make sense. I mean,
one of the greatest defensive center fielders of our generation. Thanks, Scott. That sounds like Scott Boras talk. Yep.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
So let's make predictions about where the Dodgers finish this year. I mean, they last year they had, 86 wins? Something like that? 84?
86. They finished eight games behind the Giants, yeah.
So 86 wins for them last year. I think they plus that number, which
seems
means
like
that the Giants are going to have their work cut out for them. But I don't think they like win 100. I think they win like maybe 90. You know, I think it's
I can see him pushing 93, 94. To be honest, just
really?
Because I think that a lot of this core, like Gonzalez and if Crawford is healthy, I think they're going to start to gel a little more than they did after that because there was some aftermath involved in that trade. I feel like.
But they're
but,
also going to have to.
I don't.
Rely
I think they're
going
to have to work and stay healthy to get there.
They're going to have to rely on the defense of Hanley Ramirez at shortstop. He wants to play shortstop. And
well, there is a...
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's going to lose some games out there for him.
But then again, I don't know if they're necessarily, like, is D. Gordon then an upgrade on him in general? Like, defensively, D. Gordon's an upgrade, but in general, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't, to me, I think that it's a patchwork team, and it's not what the Giants
are. That's how a lot of the really
expensive
teams are. They're kind of bolted together. They aren't built around a strategy or, you know, having options or moves available. It's pretty much just like money at the problem and see if you fix it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that works.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Yankees.
It worked for a little while in the late 90s, early 2000s, but it hasn't really worked in a while, you know?
No, it doesn't
not
work all the
much.
Time, but I do think they're going to, you know, finish north of 86. So,
yeah. No,
you know,
I think
obviously
so too.
Puts the Giants in a position where, you know, if they don't win the same amount that they did last year, 94, 95, then they're going to be in some trouble. So
we're going to be looking
Dodgers
at
going to be a little bit more competitive this year.
Sure.
I mean, they were competitive last year all the way up until the end, really, until
sure.
after the trade and the Giants soared. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Well, now let's talk about Melky Cabrera. And this was kind of a weird thing. I don't think any of us expected him to get a contract as quickly as he did. And for as much as he got it for, either.
So I almost feel like he had to jump at it because it was as much as it was.
Yeah, no, I think if he gets that call, I don't know how much negotiating you do if you're Melky Cabrera. You just kind of grab the first thing that comes along.
Not in a huge position to really like be really super choosy because mm-hmm. nobody knows what 2013 Melky is going to look like.
Yeah, he's not going to hit 346. No way.
Fat.
But I could
well,
see
he
him
still
having
as many like bloop and dink hits as he was getting. Maybe that helps a lot, you know.
I could still see him hitting around 300. I mean, I don't think doing some performance enhancing drugs adds 46 points to your batting average. I think the gains are a lot more minimal than that. And I think when people think of what steroids does to you, I think they overblow it a little bit. You know, like I think Bonds would have still hit a ton of home runs regardless. McGuire probably would still hit a ton of home runs. Sosa, all these guys would have still hit a ton of home runs, it wouldn't have been 70, 73, 66. It wouldn't have been those numbers, but it still would have been like in the 50s, high 50s. And, you know, I think it's just, it's that little bit of added zing, I guess you could say. Like some of those ground balls have a little more zip on them and get through. But I don't think it adds 40 points. I think it's somewhere in the range of like 15 to 20 points at the most. So I think he's still going to be a quality player. And plus, like I said earlier in the show, I think he's got something to prove at this point. So if he's not working hard, then there's just something mentally wrong with the guy. So,
well, maybe he can get a prescription up in Canada.
You know, yeah, maybe. Yeah. So. Are there different laws out there?
Yeah, maybe he still gets something there that he needs.
Now, the Blue Jays are going to be an interesting team to watch, though, because they basically took everybody from the Marlins. And then they added Melky. And
yes, the Toronto Marlins.
Yeah, and they've made a lot of moves. And in their division, you kind of have to. I mean,
they're probably the most competitive division. I guess the AL East is pushing it now, but
you got to think right now that's where the action's going to be. So
yeah,
you know, it's going to be really interesting to watch the AL this year. I usually don't really care too much about the AL until towards the end of the season, but I'm definitely going to keep my eye on what's going on. I mean,
all
Red Sox
that
have
I'm
picked
curious
up a bunch
about
of guys.
Houston,
and
I don't think they're going to do well. I think they're still doing plenty of rebuilding, but you know, it's. I'm just curious to see how Houston does being in the same division as Texas, a resurgent Oakland, Seattle, and Felix, and these ridiculous Angels.
No, the West and the AL is crazy. I mean, that's going to be a really competitive division.
Yeah,
as well.
I kind of feel sorry
for Houston. And here you thought Houston was going in, going, well, maybe we won't have to face Josh Hamilton as much this year. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
And here's the thing: do you think the A's have another magical season like that in them? I don't think they do. I don't think the A's compete in that division. I'm sorry.
I don't know, because I think they've changed some things up since the previous set too. You know, I think they stay competitive for at least the first few months more than we expect. But I think that unless the Angels have a horrible start like they did this year, I think the Angels and Texas probably continue to battle for it.
Yeah, I feel like
we'll see how we feel about this again by the time March hits. But you know.
Yeah, I feel like it's the Angels' division to lose, though. I'm pretty sure that. You know, when you look at what they've done, the guys they've picked up, and the guys that they kept, that's a tough team to take on. All right, let's move on to the big question. This is a very big question to a lot of Giants fans, not just because of it's kind of a smaller question in the baseball sense, but a big question in the fan of the Giants sense, because this is a guy who's obviously spent his entire career with the Giants. He's a huge fan favorite. The most recognizable Giant by far. And, of course, talking about Brian Wilson. So, Chad, I'd love to hear your take on this. You posted this question. So what do you think is the answer to what will happen with Brian Wilson?
I like the guy. I do. And I know a lot of people in baseball who are not Giants fans really despise him for his theatrics, his ego, his shtick.
His beard.
It's been going on for a couple of years. I understand why those things get stale. There are other guys on other teams and other sports that we all get tired of. But from a baseball point of view, not that guys haven't had successful seasons after two Tommy Johns, but there's really a small track record to kind of look at. Mm-hmm. And he might not be ready for the beginning of the season anyway. So you're probably not going to get a full year out of him. You don't know what you're going to get. He was eligible to make $8.5 million this year, so the Giants had to non-tender him. Yeah. I mean, they're just not going to pay the guy.
I think it was like $6.8 or something.
That was the least they could pay him, yeah.
That was the least they could pay him.
It was likely
a little bit higher with the arbitration.
But yeah, you know, no, because arbitration, you can there's a certain amount that you can change in either direction.
Well, no, 6.8
was the minimum they could have done.
Yeah, it was the lowest they could go because you can't lose more than 20% or something.
Which means it probably would have been a little bit higher than that. So $7 million, $8 million, whatever that they would have ended up with is just too much to pay him considering the size of our payroll right now. So I agreed with the Giants' move. It's a business move, and I think from Brian's point of view, he's thinking. Hey, I poured my blood, sweat, and tears into specifically that 2010 season. I blew out my arm. This is what he says. We don't know if it's true or not. There's no way to know for certain. You know, I blew out my arm to win the 2010 World Series, you know, a la Rob Nen. Well, he didn't win it, but point B.
It was not his fault.
right. It was not his fault. But point being is that apparently some bridges were burned. Brian Wilson's a little bit, you know, hurting his vagina right now.
And, yeah, a little bit.
And I think he thinks he can command a decent salary elsewhere. And so far, it's been kind of crickets chirping.
Yeah. And we can all agree, though, that Brian Wilson is the hairiest vagina of anybody we've ever seen, right?
Well, give that thing, Mr. Weezy.
So, yeah, I think what so he expected so
the
out
beard,
there.
The other beard.
I think, you know, from the beginning when I heard that, oh, he's going to be non-tendered and all that, is like, oh, well, you know, maybe some other teams are going to pass him up and maybe he'll come, you know, crawling back to the Giants. The Giants will take him for, you know, $3 million or $4 million or something like that. But I don't think that's going to happen at this point. I definitely think that's the most distant possibility. Someone's going to take a flyer on him. He's going to go end up playing for, you know, the Seattle Mariners or something. I don't know.
New York, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. Here's the thing. I don't think anyone's going to give him, because what I've heard is most people are saying, give him the incentive-laden contract. That's what makes sense,
because
right?
Because he's been injured.
And that's what makes sense.
You don't get much out of them the first year when they're recovering from TJ in a lot of cases.
But that's what the Giants want to give him. That's what the Giants want to give him. They even came out and said, we would give him something that it would get him to somewhere in the range of 6 to 8 million if it's incentives. Yeah. If he pitches a certain number of innings, gets a certain number of saves, you know, has an ERA under a certain amount, then he would get these bonuses, which basically means if you actually pitch well, you still make your money. So if you have confidence in yourself as a pitcher, you still make your money, dude. And here's
he
the thing.
He says he's going to be ready for opening day. And issue he has is, again, his personality and his shtick. A lot of teams don't want to deal with that. They don't want to bring in a personality like that. But the Giants know him. Mm-hmm. He would fit right back in. The players would embrace him. So the
fans would embrace him.
Fans would embrace him. Obviously, it makes sense for the Giants to bring him back.
It still sounds like there's interest on the Giants' part to bring him back, but it's got to be for the right price. And right now, mm-hmm. it doesn't sound, you know, it sounds like they expected Brian to try and test the waters, and that's pretty much what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But here's the thing.
You know, Ryan Madsen got a contract coming off surgery, and
got the incentive-laden contract. That's exactly what he got. So
very true.
That's what Brian Wilson should get. And the thing is, if he wants to talk about, I blew my arm out pitching for you guys in 2010, so you owe me, you got $8 million to do nothing last year but watch baseball, but sit in the dugout and get to have a champagne shower four times if you can't win the division. So, you know, it's like you got $8 million just to be a cheerleader for the team. That is payback for that. I'm sorry. We didn't ask you to blow your arm out. We asked you to come in. You could have said, my arm is killing me. Obviously, you're not going to do that. But, you know, did Rob Nin come back and say, hey, give me $8 million for doing nothing? No, he sucked it up and went off and, like, you know, his arm probably still hurts him like crazy. But I don't think he would give back his experience with the 2002 Giants, and I don't think it's right for Brian Wilson to be acting like this about this. You know, I love the guy. I understand where he's at, where he's thinking, you know, I could come back and suck, and I'll never have another chance to make money, so let me see if I can do it right now. But, dude, you're talking about making $6.8 million or whatever. If I'm making like 60K, you know what I mean? And like, screw you, you know, I don't know. To me, that's just kind of like, it's a little bit whiny, and you won the World Series, dude. That's your payback. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about getting monetary compensation 2 years later. If that's what World Series are about, then baseball is screwed. You know what I mean? Baseball is about winning the World Series, and that's what you got to win it that year. That's your payback, man. So, and Rob Nen didn't even get to win it. He blew his arm out and didn't even get to win it. So to me, it bothers me. And on the very preview episode that we're about to talk about, I called Brian Wilson my favorite player. And right now,
he is
not acting like my favorite player. And that sucks, you know, because I really like the guy a lot. And I do think that he wants to be on the Giants in his heart. But, you know, it's kind of bitch made what he's doing right now to me. And you know, it's harsh words. But that's how I feel as a fan. It feels a little bit.
Just tell us how you really feel. Will.
It feels a little bit like
seriously,
like
don't
being
hold
a
back,
whiny
man.
Baby, you know, and it sucks. It really sucks. You know what I mean? It's like, imagine if you were, you know, a huge fan of Michael Jackson, and then you found out, oh shit. But you know, okay, it's not that bad.
Yeah, I don't think he did anything to any
No,
children.
No, it's not that bad. All right, let's move on. Now let's talk about our our preview episode here. Okay, so
we're going to do this again, and we're going to get Ben on a night he doesn't have to work.
Sure, I would love that. Yeah, we're going to let have Ben. Ben, I'm going to bring, like, drugs for you.
Do I get nights off?
Yeah, you do. Come on, everybody does.
I don't understand.
So, all right, we're definitely going to try to get our season preview again for 2013. But I went back. I listened to the 2012 episode. Chad, you did too. Ben, did you get a chance to listen to that thing? You did twice.
I got to listen to most of it. So
we got a lot of predictions that were made in that episode.
Most of them very offhand or ridiculously, but they were still predictions.
We came in with a plan, and that plan quickly fell apart. So, Chad, let's start off with the first prediction.
We had a plan. No one remembers what it was.
No, hell no.
We had one.
The over-under on wins that Chad threw out that everybody laughed at was 92.5.
Under. I got to go under.
92.5 is what you said.
Now, I knew this wasn't Vegas odds or anything like that. This is what I thought the team was capable of possibly pulling off.
But you said under, too, right? I mean,
I never said anything.
Oh, you didn't say anything. Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
What did you believe at the time?
But he was the one who said it. So
I basically put my prediction out as 92.5.
Said 92.5. So no push.
Okay. Yeah. So we all basically said, I thought 89. A lot of people tended to agree with something like that. Then we got it reset to 87.5, and everyone took the over. So we all thought somewhere between 88 and 92.
We all thought around 90-ish.
Except for Thomas.
Yeah, Thomas the realist. By the way, I'm using air quotes right now.
Yes.
The realist Thomas. I'm switching these to rock and roll air quotes now. So Thomas the realist said under 87.5. He thought the Giants were going to be a bad team, clearly.
Well, you know, coming off of 2011, I get that. And at the
but they
same
were
time,
close
you know,
to being in the playoffs that year.
They weren't going to get hurt.
They were close to the playoffs without their best player in 2011.
Without their best players.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, I don't understand
the entirety of the first string team.
I don't understand why he was so pessimistic about this team. I mean,
we didn't talk about it specifically, but my thought, you know, reasoning for the 92 wins basically was that they got 86 without Buster Posey. Buster Posey clearly is going to add 4, 5, 6 wins to your team. Period. So that's kind of where
I
was coming.
His wins above replacement, and let's face it, the two catchers who replaced him are the definition of replacement.
Of the AAA replacement.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these are guys who, this is exactly what that stat is supposed to represent. His wins above replacement is somewhere like 7 or 8, right? I mean, so clearly to say 86 to 92 is not a stretch. Not a stretch at all.
Hey, wait a minute. They won 86 in 2011, 94 in 2012. That's a difference of 8.
That's 8 games right there.
Oh, you know.
Buster Posey, ladies and gentlemen.
Nothing to do with Scudero.
No, hell no.
No. Pablo had nothing to do with that either.
No, none of those guys. Yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Nah.
So, so that was laughed out of the room, and then we all had to eat our words later. But you know what? Those words were delicious. All right, so
Then I looked like a fool on the next one.
The next one you said was, what's the over-under on Freddy Sanchez playing 100 games? 100 games?
I think I reset that at like 80 and still said under.
I don't think he watched 100 games. I don't think he was in the building for 100 games. I think he was there only for like the final run. I think Thomas
broke it down to, will Willie Dills play more games than Freddie Sanchez for the Giants?
You know what? I didn't play more, but he didn't play more either. So
exactly. You guys tied.
Yeah.
Pretty much tied.
So how much did he get paid for last year? Because I think I'm getting underpaid here.
Yeah, right. I was listening to that going, oh my God, I cannot believe I threw that one out there. That is unbelievable.
Nobody thought it was ridiculous at the time, though.
No one really knew. Everybody thought his rehab was going well at the time. So, that's what we were going off of.
We all were very scared that he would dive for a ball at some point, though, and that would be the end of it. But
that he would dive for a ball and just land in a pool of Freddie Sanchez.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, we broke Freddie Sanchez. We hit a ball to his left. Oops. All right, so the next one was, what would Crawford have to hit to be worth it? And the number that everybody kind of ended up landing on was somewhere around 230. we all basically assumed he was going to play good defense, but I don't think we thought we were going to get the defense that we finally got from him down the stretch and in the World Series and playoffs.
I feel like postseason, he blew up.
Oh, he was phenomenal. Yeah. So he also hit 248. So we're saying 230 is the break-even point where we're happy with him as a player. 248
We were pretty ecstatic with Brandon Crawford.
That's found money.
He also hit at the level where we said we'd be pretty ecstatic.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's absolutely found money right there when you think that he hit 248 for the year. I mean, that's nobody saw that coming. We were all very concerned. I mean, part of picking up Scudero was in case we needed to have Scudero play short. You know, I mean, he was the guy who could play all those positions. And ended up that, you know, Scudero just third base and then went right to second base and stuck. So it's one of those things where you got to feel real positive about the future of Brandon Crawford with this team. I mean, the future is bright for this kid. And if he just continues to kind of surpass the low expectations at the plate that are kind of probably going to always be there, and just play the defense he's capable of. I mean, he's fully capable of looking back and saying, put his name next to people like Ozzie Smith and Omar Vizquel, for sure. I mean, the kid's got the talent to do it. So you got to have the longevity now. Now you got to find that part. But anyway, we're all very happy with that. Now, here's the... Let me just go through some of the things. Now, I'm gonna kind of give it to the Giants pod guys a little bit here.
Yeah, Thomas was a little downer on the Giants in that episode. It was pretty funny.
Some of the things they said were just making me crack
scarred from 2011.
Some of the things they said made me crack.
Throw the baggage on your back.
Here's Thomas. Here's one of the things Thomas said. Thomas said that he would, I'm pretty sure he guaranteed it, that Gregor Blanco would not be on the roster by the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Thomas guarantees most things. That's about it.
And that was funny.
He didn't specify whether he'd be traded or sent down or injured, but he said not on the roster.
Not on the roster. Not on the 25-man roster is what he said. Yeah. I think Danny was the one who even questioned him on it. He was like, wait, so how is he not going to be on the team? What's going to happen to him? And he was like, look, just not on the roster.
Like, yeah. Sad.
And now here's the other thing that Thomas said. It was hilarious. The hamate bone, that's a freak injury.
He forgot that people have two of them.
Exactly. And forgot that Pablo will find a way to break the other one. Pablo, you can't tell Pablo what to do, all right?
No. 2013 ends in a 3rd hamate bone. I'm calling it now.
Yeah, he finds another hamate bone that science didn't know
exists. I broke a hamate bone in my elbow. It's weird.
A genetic Pablo is a freak of nature. Discovered by the Giants trainers today.
Born with 3 hamate bones.
This man is made of hamate bones.
A man with 3 hamates.
So, yeah, so that's definitely the least freak injury that's ever been a freak injury when it happens 2 years running. But, all right, so another thing.
It's consistently freakish, okay?
Yeah, it's consistently, exactly. The other thing.
Which team do you think this is on?
Let's move on to Danny, because now we've given it to Thomas a little bit. Danny said that now that steroids are over, people aren't playing as long. So you guys, steroids are over, right? I mean, he's
the most. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Danny proclaimed it, so it must be true. Nobody got busted this year for steroids. Not two guys on the Giants. Not a guy on the A's.
Not a guy on the Phillies.
Sure. Steroids done.
Baseball is clean.
Steroids done. It's good to be in the post-steroids era, guys. Feels good. all right, here's the other thing Danny said that I thought was crazy. I couldn't believe that I heard this because I totally glazed over this one when we were doing the show. He said that the top offensive player on the Giants will not be Buster Posey or Pablo Sandoval or I can't remember the other name he threw out, but he was basically, his point was that there's going to be some surprising guy on the Giants that we're not going to expect.
Well, and he was right about that.
What's funny is there was. It's just it was only for the last third of the season.
Yeah, but also he didn't outdistance Buster Posey as the offensive star even when he was hitting as good as he was. Buster Posey still was the offensive star of this team
absolutely.
Down the stretch.
But I think, he was partially right in the sense that there's just going to be a stud that comes out of nowhere.
Sure.
I would agree that there was going to be a surprise. The surprise didn't outdistance Buster Posey, but
no.
Buster Posey was one of the surprises.
I would not ever wrap that prediction up by saying that Buster Posey is not going to be the offensive guy.
No, I would not.
Because then he goes out and has one of the best seasons by a catcher ever. Arguably the second best.
Well, then arguably that means that you need to make sure you do it every time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, I mean, arguably the second best MVP, season, you know, to no Mike Piazza's 97 campaign.
Not leading the offense, he didn't.
Maybe the only other catcher season better than what Buster Posey put together. And it's crazy. It's just crazy. So, anyway, that was another one that I was just like, holy crap, did I just hear that right? Anyway, now, this
not
part
we
is kind of interesting.
Say some things.
Oh, no, I said some crazy stuff. I'll wait for their podcast to point all those out, though. All right, so how high would we go for Kane? This one kind of got talked about. Thomas was basically saying that there is a breaking point in this, and he's right. There is a breaking point.
Yeah, it took us a while to figure that out, but yeah. I agree with him. 5 years, 130 was finally where we said, no.
Yeah, you're starting to get close there. Now, we ended up saying 5 for 125. We're fine with that. What we ended up getting, though, now, considering that in our heads, we don't even have to spend the money. We're just going, yeah, well, let's spend other people's money in our heads. but he ended up getting 127. 127 for six. So we weren't far off, but the Giants have to think that they got a deal on Matt Cain, considering
based on what they got out of him in the postseason,
yeah,
and hey, the perfect game that they got. It, I mean, he returned that value immediately.
Yeah,
he fit within the confines we had set in the podcast, and Thomas was still thinking 125 was too much. He was thinking more in the realm of 110, 115.
Because he didn't see Cain as comparable to Sabathia or Verlander, which
right.
I actually would argue this year, I think Cain was pretty close.
Pretty
and
damn
this
close.
This is before this year All-Star where he had his best year ERA. Right. He had his perfect game.
Right.
He obviously did fairly well in the postseason.
Oh, no, I'm not calling Thomas out on that one. That one, I actually think Thomas was coming from a really reasonable standpoint. Which
well, I think
is,
he was reasonable in that
standpoint. He does so often. But, I would agree that this year really bore out a very differently for Kane than I think some of us. We expected he'd be good,
yeah.
But I don't think we expected that Kane was going to finally be sort of the ace everybody was really.
If the Giants had not signed him to the extension during the year and they waited until the offseason, he'd be worth more than what they signed him for now.
Oh, hell yeah. Agreed. Absolutely. Agreed. Other teams would be pounding down the door to try to get to this guy. And Kane would probably be the
star of it. Like, never mind Zach Greinke. Kane would be the star of this free agent class.
He's top five in the league right now as far as...
Well, Kane or Cole Hamels if he hadn't signed either. But yeah.
But, I mean, you have to think that Kane is now, like, one of the top pitchers in baseball.
Yeah. Kane 6 for 127 or Greinke 6 for 147.
I know. Crazy to think about that, right? That's just
insane.
Nuts.
I don't.
All right, so here's one that was kind of funny that I heard, and it's kind of coming true. And that's when I said that I want the World Series. I want to win the World Series and then defend it with the exact same team. I think that was like pretty much verbatim what I said.
Yeah,
it's and, funny that you did not say that one sober, and you're still right. Well done, sir.
That was the closest thing I had to
no more sober predicting.
Actually,
for you.
Getting
we've been doing this all wrong.
That's as close as I got to getting something exactly right all night. I mean, that's almost exactly what's happening right now.
Yeah,
is that we won the World Series
and they pretty much have the exact same core of the team.
Yeah, I mean,
we're putting
look
the
at
same
we're
25
losing.
Out there.
Brian Wilson.
Yeah,
didn't
who
pitch
didn't even play.
Or in 2012.
Yeah, like, we might not even lose Terrio, you guys. We might even keep that guy. You know what I mean? Like,
Clayton
even the non-key guys we're going to still have. Yeah, Huff wasn't a factor. That's the guy who's gone. I mean, we're not even losing the guys who... Xavier Nady, Justin Christian. I mean, these are the guys who are going off other places.
Yeah.
We're not losing any of the core guys. It's crazy to think that that's what's happening. That never happens. So that, I mean, listening to that just put a big-ass smile on my face as soon as I heard that. I was like, hell yeah. Hell yeah, that's what I wanted to have happen. And guess what's happening to me right now? This is crazy. So, yeah. All right. Let's move on to the final part of that show, which was where we predicted why we will win it all, which is something we do on every show. And, yeah, I say, so far we're batting 500 on this bad boy for why we win it all. The show was obviously not a show in 2010, so can't really count that. But Chad, or no, sorry, we'll start with Ben's. Mine's actually listed first here. So mine is that I said we would win it all because we weren't going to have the same injury situation, basically the freak injuries.
And you were specifically referring to Posey.
To Buster Posey, yeah. And I think it was Danny who was arguing with me pretty vehemently about, like, you can't say that because, you know, it's you can't, just because it's
always going to happen.
Just because it happened one year doesn't mean it's not going to happen the next year. But my argument was that 2011 was the aberration. You know what I mean? Like, that was the year where it's like, this doesn't happen all the time.
Right. So, and I would have said, and I don't remember if I did, but I would have said that, you know, there's always going to be some kind of injury, but
no, yeah, absolutely.
That, like,
yeah,
that, I don't think we were going to.
But you're not going to lose your best player for the entire year, every year. It just doesn't happen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you can have a player who has chronic injuries.
I don't know, guys. Yeah, I mean, we lost Ryan Wilson the whole year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But that was an event.
And Freddie Sanchez.
A freak event, so.
The thing is, yeah, like somebody who's injury prone, but you know, at this point, it's like you're not going to have Scott Cousins barrel over Buster Posey every year or something similar to that. It's going to take him completely out. And it didn't happen. And guess what? We won it all. So so I got to say, I had two good moments there with that one. Let's see. Ben, you said that the rotation was gelling and that Vogelsong was coming back off of injury. So and we were going to have a full year of him. And the other guys, and pretty much that was pretty spot on until the end of the season. The rotation was
I nailed
baseball.
Most things other than trading Zito and Lincecum's places and how well they did. I think that I don't think any of us saw coming.
No,
for sure.
No,
but no, I mean, Vogelsong, we got a really solid year out of Vogelsong. If he had that little dip at the end of the season, he would have been pushing for the ERA title easily. And
no, he was,
you know,
he was
we got
year, yeah,
probably the best year out of Kane we expected, and Bumgarner was sort of off and on. So
well, he was on for a long time, and then he was off when all of the starters kind of got off together.
Yeah,
so
it's just, his was much more drastic, I feel like. But yeah, everybody kind of just like lost it for a couple of weeks,
and yet we still come out with 94 wins. So
Neener lost it too, but neener neener neener.
All right, so Michael from Grubby Glove was there. And he actually had the most coherent thing to say at that point. He was
he was pretty much the only
reasonable
sober one at that point.
Yeah.
Well, no, Ben was too. Ben was
sober. Ben was sober. So Michael said that the Giants would win it all because the D-backs weren't going to put it all together again. He was correct there.
And who was it? Thomas stepped in and said, "What are you talking about? The
D-backs
are
so
a great
good.
Team.
They're so amazing.
Good.
They're better than they were last year." Yeah.
Like, oops.
Which, I mean, I would say they're not bad, but they really, beyond like Trevor Cahill and sometimes Trevor Bauer, they didn't have a lot of depth by the end of the year in the pitching rotation. You know, Daniel Hudson, I got to give him credit.
They had one of those years, though, where everything came together in 2011. And that, you know, it's true that that's tough to do year after year. It's not kind of surprised. That's why I think the A's, I don't know if the A's are just going to compete in a really tough division, because they had one of those magical seasons. It's tough to do that over and over again. So
yeah, but I think they have a chance, and that's something we can talk about some other time, because A's, but you know, it's I think I wouldn't count them out, but they think they're in.
I'm not
going to
count them out, but I don't think
they have their work cut out for them to do what they did last year and tie the Yankees for the season.
Yeah, so. I don't think they come from like 7 games back with 9 games to play or whatever. You know what I mean? I don't think that kind of stuff happens all the time. Yeah, but then he also said Bumgarner was going to have his big year, his big breakout year, which, you know, he wasn't far off on. Bumgarner definitely turned some heads this year, and especially with some of his later playoff performances after they kind of all figured it out.
Yeah.
He definitely was struggling with his mechanics when the playoffs started, but he worked it out, and he was a big part of us winning. So I do agree that I think Bumgarner kind of solidified himself as a guy who can pitch a full season, can be quality for most of it. Obviously, he had a couple of down points and slumped a little bit, but he wasn't far off.
I think we're going to see a trajectory for Bumgarner that's not completely out of line with Matt Cain. I think that he's going to mature a little every year, but I don't know that he's going to necessarily have like one solid breakout season.
Sure.
Unless you consider this a breakout season for Kane in a way, which you kind of can. I do think he talked himself into the national top 10 discussion in a way he hadn't in previous seasons. You know, he always sort of got mentioned
as part of the Lincecum and Kane tandem. Yeah, he wasn't even top of the Giants before, so, you know, now.
Right, and I think that now he's taken that spot and he's really solidified it, and I think that Bumgarner, we're probably going to see something similar. When we see a breakout season from him, we're almost going to be expecting it in a way, I feel like.
No,
but
sure. I think he's getting stronger,
he'll establish
too.
Himself nationally, and that'll be his breakout for sort of everyone, but sort of we won't notice it the same way. That's my thought on Bumgarner's career trajectory, but obviously we're talking about how wrong we were about things. I probably shouldn't make guesses and predictions.
Well, here's the thing. He's still very young. He's already super strong, and I think he's getting stronger. So I definitely think, you know, we'll keep an eye on him, but I think everybody pretty much knows that he's going to be a quality guy going forward for a long time. Now, Chad's prediction was dumb luck, which actually, if you go down to Detroit, I think they're going to say you were the most correct.
They're going to say I was the most correct, yeah, but I was impatient and devoid of any critical thinking skills at that point.
Sure.
So.
There is that.
I figured that was as good as reason as any.
But so. You know what? That was
dumb luck.
That was the big talk of the playoffs from everybody who wasn't a Giants fan, was just how lucky the Giants were getting. Oh, my God, they're getting so much luck.
If you had told me six elimination games, I would have said, oh, Chad was probably the most accurate out of all of our predictions then.
But you know what? Like,
that was the lead story about by most of the baseball broadcasters, including guys like Mitch Williams and some of the ESPN crew during their streak, you know, before the World Series. That's what everybody kept talking about. They kept replaying the ball off the bag and, you know, ball's doing this and ball's doing that. It was like the 100 pence triple double. And it's just like, all right, you know, guys, this is a game of baseball. It's not like the Giants can control this, and you know,
they're not playing chess. You know what I mean? It's like you're hitting you're batting a ball that's being thrown at you very fast. Anything can happen, and anything does happen. You know, you're not playing a controlled game.
For a while, the anything went. You know, it's Gregor Blanco nudges a bunt that somehow stays fair.
Yeah, but I think all that is bullshit. Gregor Blanco bunted an amazing bunt. It doesn't matter that it stayed fair by a little bit. It stayed fair, and like the hitting the bag thing, I think Pagan's hit that hit the bag was going to be a hit regardless. It just wasn't going to be a double.
Wasn't going to be a double.
I'll agree on that.
I think there's a lot of those things where people say, oh, that's luck. But really, like, okay, so then the pitcher for the Cardinals, I can't remember his name now, hitting the bag with his throw, that's right. Them making a bad play. That's not luck. That was going to be an error anyway. Playing poorly. That's, you know, you can't call that luck.
That was a question of leaving him in too long, of causing him to rush his throw because we had a fast guy on the bases.
No, I mean, it's just like that, to me, is a stupid argument to ever
say. Giants pitcher is getting a hit in five consecutive playoff games. You know, things like that. It's like,
sure.
Well, you know,
they got a hit. It's not like it's all luck. It's Verlander not throwing the pitch he wanted to. Maybe it's just Miguel Cabrera being a shitty third baseman who can't cut down he hit it kind of hard.
Went past me.
It's just a stupid argument. And it's the kind of argument that people make when their team lost, you know. And I'm sure that we'll make arguments like that at some point, too, when the Giants don't win the World Series and, you know, whatever. But
so I attribute half of my correct prediction to dumb luck itself.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
Well played.
Now,
you're only doing that because you lost, Chad.
Danny's prediction was the second wild card. Now, I'm going to bring up an interesting point here where I think he was actually semi-right, too. I think we were all pretty right, which is kind of funny. Except for one guy. Yeah. The second wild card did definitely come into play because we played St. Louis rather than having to play the Braves.
Right.
And who knows what happens if we play the Braves? I don't know. The Braves were a scary team. You know, I mean, the Braves, to me, honestly, were a very scary team. And the Cardinals sure had all that magic and everything, but, you know,
the Braves were really solid.
The magic ran out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if we get past the Braves. Nobody knows if we get past the Braves. We got past the Cardinals.
Obviously, we didn't take the second wild card, but it became a factor. And, I mean, you could see it, too. There was a huge push to try and keep distance from the Dodgers because we didn't want to have a one-game wild card playoff. We wanted to win the division and go directly into the DS.
Yeah.
And, you know, that there was definitely an element of wild cards not good enough anymore, which led to a lot of really interesting races. But that's part of it.
No, absolutely. And the fact is, whether we got it or not, it wasn't what mattered. What mattered was it was there. And what mattered was that the Cardinals got it and then took down the Braves when that
definitely,
you know,
definitely directly affected our whole playoff path.
Now, Thomas, on the other hand, said, we will not win it all. I'm a realist. Yeah. Well, Thomas, let's talk about real life real quick for a second here. What actually happened in the world? I think your realism is actually more like surrealism.
Pessimism.
Or just straight up pessimism.
I don't know. Marco Scudero would argue that this season was pretty surreal.
Sure. <so. laughs> Sure. I mean, when it rains on you in the bottom of the ninth and you know, yeah. you have a
and
magical
you
moment.
Balls and
yeah,
throw
totally.
Your hands up in the air and, you know.
Whatever. Yeah, but real life sometimes is pretty damn sweet. And I got to say, as a Giants fan, I'm never going to be one of those guys who just waits for the worst thing. It's not my nature. I'm always going to hope for the best thing. And,
I like how you say that as a Giants fan when it's like, you know, there's a pretty even split of people who do that and people who kind of take it, you know.
Well, no, I'm not saying like this is a thing Giants fans do or something. I'm saying for me as
for
a Giants fan.
As a Giants, got it.
Yeah, maybe it's just me, but for me, I'm going to always think of the positive things that could happen. Now, I mean, I'm also a guy who roots for the Warriors every year and watches tons of Warriors games.
Not bad.
So
it took about
35
years for us to get to one like this. So,
yeah,
you know.
I'm aware of the teams playing poorly, and I'm aware that that's most of the time what's going to happen. But I got to be honest. I'm always going to be the guy who thinks we could do this, we could win this, you know.
It's more fun to me that way. Some of us, admittedly, who are, you know, in the business of doing predictions and commentary and analysis, we forget that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's one of the things that sometimes we sort of will look at fans who don't spend their time analyzing, or the fans who honestly just say the Giants are going to win every year without even knowing who plays for the Dodgers. You know, at least know who to yell at.
No, but I mean, I just think it's more fun.
There's something
to
it. You got to have those fans because, you know, there's it's a new season every year, and you never know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, so let's move on to our last few segments here. It was pretty cool to go back and listen to that though, and it was interesting to hear what our thoughts were before, and some of them pretty close, and pretty right on. Some of them awful.
Some of them, right. Freddie Sanchez for 100 games.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so
hey, we follow that with 80. All right. So
yeah. How many does he play this year, Chad?
Zero.
Okay. All right. Now it's time for Tweet at Me, brah. And Chad, you want to start us off? You got one here from Mr. Brian Murphy, who's always good for a good tweet.
Every 6 day on Twitter, he just had a whole series of funny tweets about Andres Torres. But he said, obviously, the Giants will have to raise ticket prices significantly to afford Andres Torres. But that's what happens with a break-even team.
Yeah, at $2 million, that's what's going to break the bank right there. But you know what? We're going to make up for that in Torres designer jean sales. So,
oh, yes.
Yeah, so look out for that.
And Torres cinder block workout videos.
You know what? Workout video.
I know. I tweeted that out today from the TortureCast account because after seeing that the franchise stuff, that's all I can picture him now. There's two visions I have. Is one of him shirtless in expensive jeans, barefooted in a pile of mud, throwing cinder blocks over his
head. Why did he wear those jeans when he worked out? What the hell was that?
Not really.
I assume
certain
those
about
are the
that.
Only ones he had.
That's
just
true.
Several pairs.
He just
of
has a massive
jeans.
Closet full of designer jeans.
I don't know. Maybe he knew the camera crew was coming.
And the second one was I attended the 2010 World Series parade, and he got out of the cable car and was walking out into the fans, and
he came
over our section
and
shook a few of our hands, and he was head to toe in the tightest, most metrosexual getup with the little spike mohawk, and it's just like, wow, that just doesn't quite look like a baseball player.
Hey, dude, if you got it, flaunt it. And Torres, just ask the ladies.
Dude has like 2% body fat. So.
He's got it. All right, I'm gonna tweet at you, brah. We got love for Pat the Bat, and I just couldn't find any tweets from like recently about anything except for Torres.
I like how you brought it back to love for Pat the Bat.
Yeah. It was in that episode
we just reviewed. Yeah.
But she repeated my sentiments here, but it was kind of funny. She was like she was acting like Brian Wilson's mother here. It was Brian Patrick Wilson. You quit your pouting and come back to those who love you and tolerate your insanity. And I've actually tweeted at Brian Wilson myself, not from the TortureCast account, from the Willie Dills account. And I said, please don't leave this team. Everyone's going to be really sad if you do that. And we just want you back. And that's all. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but the sentiment was the same. It's like, come on, dude, stop doing this. Stop being a douche and just come back to the Giants. That's what we want. All right. New favorite guy time. Chadwick.
All right, Brian Sabian for his magical timing once again for signing Angel Pagan a day before Victorino signed for 3 years and 39 with the Red Sox.
Yeah, that was...
Well, if Pagan and his agents held out one more day...
Yeah, he would have ended up getting like 50 mil for four. I mean...
Yeah. Maybe that, he wouldn't be a Giant at this point.
That was one of those things of just sweet, sweet timing, you know, and it was
so according... excuse me. According to Bags, basically what it came down to is the Phillies actually offered him essentially a three-year contract. I take that back, a four-year contract, same amount of money, 40 mil, but he was going for a fifth year, but he couldn't get a single team to basically throw out that fifth year. And, you know, considering everything equal, he just said, hey, the Giants are a good team. I enjoy the chemistry. I enjoy the locker room. So
I enjoy winning World Series.
Yeah. And it's a competitive deal. So
he didn't take a huge discount to come to the Giants. He took a competitive deal and said, out of these two things, what do I want more? And he's, you know, I want to come back to a place where I know I'm liked, where he won over a ton of fans. How many salutes do you think he's going to get when he comes back to the city?
Totally. I mean, I don't get why you wouldn't do that. It makes total sense.
I think that, you know, if we had been able to do that and we've been in a position, I think Cody Ross would have done something similar, but we weren't in the spot to do that.
But I do think the Giants were at their limit of what they were willing to go, because Willie and I were talking about before you joined that he's probably not quite worth $10 million a year, but, you know, that's what the market's bearing right now.
Right.
But if he had signed, or Victorino had signed first, then that's He might not be with the Giants right now.
No,
$10 million a year, I don't know. But I think that for what the market was and for what sort of the sub-value of Angel Pagan is to this team and sort of what 4 years means, I think we made out decently well. I don't think this is like Kane, where I think we ended up getting a ton of value that we didn't even expect. But I'm okay with it.
No, totally. Yeah. I think it was the right move. And
I'm not even complaining with 3 years for Scudero. I'm okay with that.
No.
You weren't here for our discussion, but we were definitely, none of us were complaining about any of it.
We think it's very possible that it is his third year when he's 40. Yeah, they're probably not going to get the value for it. But if he can contribute to a playoff run, you know, in the first year or two of his contract, and plus what he did this past year, it's all gravy.
No, absolutely. So,
reward for last year, and that's fine.
My new favorite guy, and I'm going off the field again, like you did, Chad. I'm going with Dwayne Kuiper, and because of a moment that happened during the parade that still makes me laugh. And of course, there's a lot of moments during the parade and the celebration that were just really fun for all of us, because you know, how could it not be fun? But Dwayne Kuiper saying, getting the whole crowd to get behind him to do his home run call, which is, of course, he hits it high, he hits it deep, he hits it out of here. And he's like, all right, everybody do that, and we're going to practice. So, Pablo, I need you to take a swing. And so Pablo swings, and he hits it high, he hits it deep, he hits it out of here. And then, all right, we're doing one more time. Jeremy Affeldt, get up, take a swing. So Affeldt kind of takes a sweet time and acts like, oh, my God, I can't believe they're asking me to do this. Takes a big swing. This Jeremy Affeldt swings and misses. He's just one of the funniest moments. And
there's
perfect.
A genuine look of surprise on Affeldt's face, too.
Because the thing is, they know. I love the fact that our announcers are still kind of kicking it in the clubhouse and giving it to the players, and the players are giving it to them. And it's almost like, I mean, those two guys were, that's the way they were when they were players, you know, Kruko and Kipe. And so it was super fun to watch that moment. And I watched it a few times since, because it was just awesome. All right, let's hate on people. I think, am I the only one hating on somebody? I guess so. But you know what?
My battery's dead, so I'm pretty much going through the phone.
I think we can all agree on the hate for this one. Magic Johnson, if you're going to muck up a sport, why don't you go muck up basketball, dude? Why do you come over here to baseball and start throwing ridiculous money around?
Basketball
is already screwed up anyway. I mean, the referees have so much to do with the outcome of the game and everything. And I just think it's like, dude, you come in here and then you just start throwing your money around like you're magic or something. Anyway, it just bothers me. All right, why we'll win it all, Chad.
It's kind of funny. It actually falls right in line with your prediction at the beginning of the year, but we've brought the gang back.
Yep.
There's no reason on paper we shouldn't be able to do this again.
I agree with that totally. Ben, I know you don't have one written here, but I'm sure you can tell us why you think we will win it all.
Sure. Can I just go with second verse, same as the first?
Yeah.
I think we had a couple of guys who really had, like, their – national discussion breakout seasons. I think we saw a lot from Vogelsong, even though you could call last year's breakout year, but I would really say Posey and Kane, and even to some extent Pablo, really showed the world kind of like, hey, this is what we're about as players, and this is, now that we have the chance to show you this, this is what we can do. And I think that that speaks really well as a team for the kind of longevity that we have, the kind of sustainability this team has, which isn't something that I know if I would have said with the 2010 team. There was a lot of young homegrown talent, and there was also a lot of guys who were starting to, you know, who had kind of that one last hurrah. And I don't really feel like, depending on what your opinion of Marco Scudero, I don't really feel like this was made up of a last hurrah team. I think there's a lot of sustainability on the squad.
I agree with all of that. I'm going to say that we will win it all because, both of your points are very valid. Like, we're not the 2010 team. We're not the team that surprised everybody and shocked the world. But, right now this team is a legitimate team that all of the baseball analysts are actually taking note. And I think here's my real thing to say about this. I think that the Giants feel like the management, the players, everybody, that this is maybe the only legitimate shot we're ever going to have at being a part of a dynasty, which is just super rare in sports. If you win 3 and 4, you have to call it that. And so I think that everybody is going to be doing everything they possibly can during the offseason. The training staff, everybody is going to be on it.
Who doesn't want to be the next big red machine, you know?
Exactly. I mean, everyone's going to be on it because you can go down
in history. Nobody's had a team like that since Sparky Anderson in a way. And there's so many arguments you can make for teams that were solid, that were good. You know, Yankees, Phillies recently. I mean, A's and 72 are really one of the others. And
that's the last real time, yeah. I mean, the Yankees won it 3 years in a row, right? 99, 2000, 2001 or something? Or
98, 2000.
So that's the last time it was done, really. But the thing is that in sports, you want to go down in history, you do it by winning championships. And when you've already won two now, you know, that third one, that's the real one that kind of solidifies. You know, that's the one that goes, oh, now you're like in Michael Jordan status. And Sammy needs a picture with three trophies. That's what she just told me.
Yeah, I heard they're calling the trophies the twins right now.
Yeah, we actually got pictures taken with them. Thank you to Samantha.
Saw that. Well done.
Yeah, so what were those in the KNBR studios or something?
Yeah, we went down to KNBR, and me, my mom, Jill, and Sammy, who was on the episode that we were just talking about, by the way.
This is true.
And we were down there because we were the crew that watched all the games together. So all four of us got together and got the pictures taken. And we went out afterwards and got rally shots because that was another part of our ritual of watching games. Yeah, it was awesome. I'll definitely post some of those on TortureCast's site because that was just the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, no, I saw those on Facebook. That was fantastic.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, I wish I'd gotten to take more shots at the World Series film.
Yeah.
Presentation, but yeah, that was pretty hilarious too.
So we're gonna wrap up.
We didn't even talk about that. Maybe we could consider.
Yeah, we gotta save it for 43.
We gotta save some material. There's a lot of off season left.
Yeah, I want to hear about that. That's good.
So let's wrap things up for episode 42, the Jackie Robinson and the Hot Stove episode. And I want to say, if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do so at TortureCast. You can also follow each one of us individually. Chad King is at ChadK21. Ben Lee is at Fried Duck. And Willie Dills is me, Willie Dills. Pretty easy. You can also find us on Facebook. We have a page there. We are now in the Stitcher directory, so you can find us there as well. And
we're spreading.
Yeah, we're spreading it out. Because, all those other baseball fans out there, they want to get some of that TortureCast love. We're also available on TortureCast.com, which is where the blog is, which hopefully we'll get some activity going. I'll make a post about those pictures for sure. And if you want to donate to us, you can do so on PayPal. I think there's a button on all those places. And, thank you, everybody, for listening to episode 42. We'll see you next time for episode 43.
If the world doesn't end first.
If the world does end, though.
Then the Giants are the last.
The World Series winners of all time. So
we'll take that too.
Yeah, thanks, Mines.
No one will remember, but so what?
It's okay.
Yeah, so I'm huddling with my family in the corner of the
Mayan
house
gods
as the inferno
remember.
Is approaching. I'll just remember that.
Yeah, I'll look up and I'll smile and just think, Buster Posey, and then I'll die in a fiery
sky
death.
Is black and orange.
All right, we're out of here. Boom. A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.